Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts from 970 ESPN and Steelers Nation Radio, David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just a couple of Daves chilling, talking Steelers. Now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave, Season 6, Episode 100. I'm Dave Bryan from SteelersDepot.com, my co-host David Todd. Normally off during this time of the off-season here, concentrating on the Penguins and the Pirates, and that allows me to get Alex Cazor in some extra time to talk about draft and other things related to the Steelers. So here he is once again on the 100th episode of Season 6. I didn't buy him a cake or get him a gift today, but Alex, welcome back and happy Monday to you.
Well, Dave, I was just telling you before the podcast that Steelers Depot's birthday's coming up here. I think we're turning 8 soon, and I'm going to embarrass you because you keep saying that your birthday's coming up too. So when is it? We gotta get you a cake.
It's on a Saturday.
On a Saturday? You're not going to tell me the day?
April 16th. Okay. I was the day after taxes, baby. I never look forward to my birthday because I'm usually writing the government a big check. That's happening again this year. And it just always seems like with all the things that we have going on in our personal lives, talking about me and my wife, all the proverbial crap likes to hit the fan in the month of April. So all my birthday means is I spend a whole heck of a lot of money. Mm-hmm. So people wonder why I don't, my wife will get me a cake and all like that. But outside of that, I really don't celebrate it too terribly much. But boy, it seems like a lifetime ago that the first post went up on Steelers Depot, and actually the site, I think, had been around maybe a year or two earlier than that. It just really wasn't a blog per se, but I'll have to go back and look at it's not like my writing has improved much, but go back and see how more worser it was, if there is such a thing. Pre-draft visits are continuing on. We ought to be done with these probably by the end of this week, maybe, judging by at the rate that some of these are coming in. And now, of course, that pro days are over, it allows them to visit with guys, more frequently during the week as well, too. A few guys that we expect to be announced today coming in for visits on this Monday, Boston College safety Justin Simmons, Virginia Tech edge rusher Daddy Nicholas. Two guys that really did both those. Well, I know we didn't do the study on the safeties, but as far as edge rushers went, Daddy Nicholas definitely fit that criteria, right?
He came close. He was a little underweight, and again, the weird thing with the outside linebackers were with the agility drills, and he just missed in both the short shuttle and the three cone. So he was close, but he did miss barely in a couple areas.
Do you know what his spark score was? Do you remember right off the top of your head?
I don't. I'm not sure the last time I've even seen the list of the spark scores. I'm sure he tested well, though, because he is a really good athlete. And I think his measurables and everything else, the 40 time and his vert and things like that, were all pretty good.
I'm looking at that list right now. He finished 8th overall as far as, edge position goes. It goes Charles Tapper, Emmanuel Ogba, Shaq Lawson, Alex McAllister, Joey Bosa, Stephen Weatherly, Noah Spence, and then Daddy Nicholas. So, Virginia Tech is definitely a school that the Steelers have a history with when it comes to edge rushers. Of course, Jason Worlds went there. I guess he was listed at 235, right?
Yeah. He got put in a weird system at Virginia Tech where he was playing with his hand down. He was kind of playing inside. Tech would run that bare front, and it was not a great utilization of Nicholas' skill set.
More of a Leo, or?
He wasn't even. He was, again, a lot of it was his hand down. Like, he was playing like a traditional end, and then the 235, that didn't always work out for him.
He looks like a guy that can put on 15, though, right?
I think he's got a way to go to improve. He has to get some weights, so he better be able to put on at least 10 pounds. You know, Nichols is a great athlete, and he's got some moves, and he'll flash. And I thought the Senior Bowl game itself was a really good, you know, showing for him. But I've always compared him to Howard Jones, as undersized guys that are really strong athletes with some really interesting measurables. Nicholas jumped 41 inches in the vert. No other defensive end dropped more than 35 and a half inches. But I really think Nichols is best as a 4-3 sub-package end in the way that Howard Jones is now being used down at Tampa Bay and kind of having, you know, a good degree of success there. And I think the other thing that kind of compares me to Jones to Nichols is just I think these guys need a lot of coaching. You know, I was down there for Senior Bowl practice, and you see Nichols make, you know, mistake after mistake for really minor things, knowing where to line up, getting on the ball, you know, super minor things like that. So I kind of get the feeling that he's a guy that needs kind of his hand held a little bit and has to have a lot of coaching, similar to the way that I saw Howard Jones in training camp.
But what I meant by my comment is, could you see him kind of playing the Leo?
Yeah, I think that's probably, I mean, I think most people see him as a 3-4 edge guy. I kind of differ on that a little bit. I really think he's a one-speed, go-forward kind of guy. But I think conventionally, you know, and obviously Pittsburgh is seeing him as just that 3-4 outside linebacker.
And best-case scenario for him, I would think, first couple of years is more of a role player, a situation player. It's hard to imagine a guy like him, especially in Pittsburgh, coming in at that weight and being considered an every-down guy, right?
Of course, right. And again, I could be wrong, and you know, who knows where his ceiling is at. But for me personally, just watching him the way that I have, I think his ceiling is as a sub-package rusher in a 4-3 scheme. You simplify things for him. Just go one speed, go forward, get after the quarterback. I think that's the best way to get something out of him.
I know Dane Brugler, and by the way, for those who are listening, if you want a real, you know, fairly, I don't want to say cheap because that in terms of the whole thing's cheap, but I guess inexpensive is the best word to use. Dane Brugler's draft guide is out, and this thing just gets better and better by the year. I don't know if you've had a chance to look at it yet, Alex, look, I mean, there's going to be things that we differ with from one analyst to the next, without a doubt. But just for the sake of speaking, if you want some good reading material here in the final couple of weeks of the draft, I would seek this out. You should be able to find it on Dane's timeline. But it's worth, I forget what I paid for it, $6. Mm-hmm. I would have paid $16 for it, you know. But I say that because he has Daddy Nicholas ranked 22nd overall when it comes to defensive ends. He has kind of a fifth-round grade on him, and it's hard to argue with that. I think Daddy Nicholas is the kind of guy, I think, day three draft pick, right?
Yeah, I remember he was one of the first guys I did a report on way back in February, and I think I put a mid-sixth round on him. I've seen some people think him as high as the third. I just think he's a super long shot that has a lot of athletic potential, that's long, 34 and three-quarter inch arms. But I just don't know. I think his ceiling is capped. And honestly, in Pittsburgh, I mean, I know he's a fit because of the way that he looks, and he's an athlete and his size, but I really don't know if he'd have a ton of success in Pittsburgh.
I'm with you.
I think it's just too much going on. I think he needs to, again, I don't want to harp on it, but I think he needs to be in a simplified scheme, you know, again, like Howard Jones. I mean, you know, obviously, you know, Stu's wanted to retain him, but he goes to Tampa Bay, he plays in that sub-package role, play with your hand down, get after the quarterback, and I think Jones got like 3 sacks or something this year and in some decent playing time. So I think that's the ceiling for Daddy Nichols. I actually think they're really similar players.
All right, good comp there. The other guy we mentioned, Justin Simmons, probably not a huge surprise when it comes to him. This is another guy with a very nice spark score. You know, the Steelers, and really, you know, it's not like spark is this big secret yet. We don't know if that's exactly what all these teams use. You know, it was rumored that this kind of thing was engineered by Nike for, you know, to help the Seattle Seahawks. But you know, it's definitely when you can take these combine numbers and throw them into kind of a blender to use in some sort of ranking system when it comes to athleticism. I like it, and I like to be able to look back at it. And when you look at a guy like Justin Simmons, according to, you know, his Spark score, second overall safety with a what they call a P Spark of 134.9. Very, very, very athletic kid. I view him, after seeing a lot of his tape, more as a center field type than I do in the box. I had several takeaways, I think, last year. Seems to be a very heady player. Probably a, you know, another one of those guys that you can throw into third or fourth round grade, and that might be where he actually ends up being drafted, as third or fourth round. What can you tell me different from what I've laid out there about Justin Simmons?
Well, Dave, I pretty much agree with you across the board. Maybe I missed something, but, you know, his combine numbers were off the charts and totally surprised me. He ran well, and this is also a slow safety class. He ran a 4.61. He jumped 40 inches in the vertical, 10.6 in the broad. His agility drills were, I think, top in his whole defensive back group, a 3.85 and a 6.58. I mean, my goodness, those are fantastic numbers for a 200-pound kid. But you're right, he's smart. He's played a lot of positions. He's wore a lot of hats at Boston College. You know, Boston College, that program was, as a whole, is terrible. But that defense was really good this year. It just had the worst offense in college football. I mean, he's a smart guy. I really kind of compared him to a Darian Thompson, maybe a slightly poorer man's version of it. And maybe Simmons only goes around later than Thompson, or maybe even the gap's closer than that. You know, after Thompson has tested so poorly and Simmons has tested so well, it's hard for me to find a ton of flaws in Simmons' game. And I think, you know, as a third round guy, I'm all for it.
You're going to be using him more as a coverage safety, though, more than you are as a box player. Right.
Yeah, I think he could thrive as that single high. I think you can do a lot with him, though, because he did so much at Boston College. I think he's a versatile guy that doesn't necessarily scream, you know, profiling as a true free safety or scream as a true strong safety like some of these other guys have. Like Deion Bush is a strong safety all day, put him in the box. I think Simmons you can do a lot with. I think that's attractive when you can ask a guy to wear a lot of hats, especially in a Pittsburgh scheme where you want your guys to be able to kind of do everything. Have some free safety responsibilities where you're, you know, coverage heavy and have some strong safety responsibilities where you're in the box and you're thumping against the run. So I think that's attractive with Simmons because he's a good athlete. He's a smart guy. He's experienced. He's productive. I mean, in terms of just baseline values, he hits all those boxes.
Yeah, he's probably – and, well, heck, the Spark score tells us that he's probably the most athletic one that the Steelers have looked at, and probably – I don't know if the word lowest risk is. I think Boston College could have used him in the box more had they wanted to. They just chose not to. I mean, pretty much had him play center field. In fact, if you look at kind of some of the stuff Dane Brugler wrote about him as well, too, talking about his early years pre 2015, He played seven games at, or it looks like he started seven games at free safety in 2014 and six at corner. Mm-hmm. And if you go back to, let's see here, what was it? It didn't look like he started any games at free safety, or he started two games in 2013. There's no designation about what position really there. But if you go back to 2012, his first season at Boston College, six at free safety, one at corner. So this is definitely, despite the, you know, what we would kind of maybe want the 40 time to be a little bit faster, maybe in that, what, 4.59 range. Regardless, he is a guy that can flip his hips and turn and run and was used in coverage quite a bit. And as you mentioned, more than anything, the thing that jumps out the most with him when it comes to those combine numbers is that short mm-hmm. shuttle, that three, how does Mike Tomlin like to say, quick C to do, right?
That you love that phrase too. I think you've adopted that phrase. But
yeah, of course, C to do is more about instincts mm-hmm. and all. But I mean, this guy has a good COD, and on film he has a great C to do.
I like it. Yeah. So you know, if the Steelers miss out on a safety in the second round, or if there's somebody else on the board that's screaming at him at 58 and they want to wait on a safety, if you can get Simmons in the third round at a pick 89, I think you're going to walk away really, really happy.
I think so too. I think Dane has something like a fourth round grade on him. I think there's a good shot he's on the board in the third round, right?
I think he goes in the third after that combine workout, because again, those were some measurables that honestly, and again, maybe I just missed something, but I did not see him testing that well in that, like you said, that spark score that put him second overall in his class. Now it is kind of a poor class for safeties, but still, you know, 40 inches is 40 inches. The shuttle drills are what they are. So yeah, I think he's going to go in the third.
Would you rather have Keanu Neal in a second, Darian Thompson in the – you're going to be upset with me on this. I think Darian Thompson is going to drop a little bit further than what we've even been talking about. I think Darian Thompson might end up being an early fourth-round guy by time. But for the sake of the argument, let's go would you rather have Keanu Neal in the second, Darian Thompson in the third, or let's say Justin Simmons in the fourth?
That is a really good question to start my week off, Dave. You're going to have me thinking about that one all week long. I think I would take Simmons because I just don't think the gap is that big. And if, let's just say, you know, Simmons in the fourth, that way I can upgrade at second and third. I can get, you know, whoever I need to at those spots, because I don't think there's a big drop off between Neal and Simmons. And it's definitely not a big drop off between Thompson and Simmons. So, yeah, I'll take Simmons in the fourth.
Yeah, I think I'm with you. I think the thing that we probably need to look at here with him is the tangibles related to him possibly playing in the box more, you know. But I mean, look, you talk about in this day and age about wanting safeties or guys that can play in the slot and cover these big athletic tight ends these days. That's your boy right there.
Absolutely.
I mean, I really think, and I really kind of watched a lot on him the last few days after the it was, you know, firmed up in stone that he was coming in for a pre-draft visit. And he's a guy that really grows on you quick. I mean, has the ball skills, and we know, you know, the Steelers last year, to hear Kevin Colbert talk, boy, they put a lot of emphasis on players who could take the football away. And I'm with you with what you said earlier. I think Justin Simmons in the third. I don't think I would be too upset with that. So
now I want to throw this hypothetical back at you. I just want to get you just I'm not going to hold you to it. Is the old saying?
I'm going to give you the Tomlin I don't deal in hypothetical.
No, you can't do that after.
I know. Go ahead.
Would you rather have Carl Joseph in the first or Justin Simmons in the fourth?
Wow, now that's an even greater question.
Yeah.
There.
Yeah.
Man, you know, we talked extensively, I think in the Friday show or last Monday show about guys that trying to pencil in it could potentially be the pick. Carl Joseph is great on film. He really, it's a shame that we couldn't see more Carl Joseph in 2015 because of that knee injury. He is probably, I don't think there's probably about, I think he's the most versatile safety in this year's class. I think even with this knee injury, I think he's head and shoulders the top safety in this class. True safety, the kid in Florida State, you know, obviously he's going to go, Jalen Ramsey is going to go top of the first round, but, you know, there's some people that think he could even play corner. So, but as far as a guy that you wanted to play in the box, play deep center field, you know, a hybrid kind of position if you kind of need that out of him. You know, if it wasn't for that knee injury, we would know that Carl Joseph was a slam dunk first round pick, yeah. I think.
You answer the question. It's a long way to get to the answer.
I guess my question is, I would take Carl Joseph late in the first, and I mean, great character, smart player, has the extensive playing time at Virginia Tech to back up. You know, they say, and Kevin Colbert's talked about this as well too, if you're going to draft a player in the first round that hasn't run for you, you better have a lot of tape on him. You better know who that player is. And I believe they do with Carl Joseph. You heard the defensive coordinator talk right after that injury took place, I think last year, saying that just, you know, probably one of the best all-around defensive players he's ever coached.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know how much hyperbole is there, but, I mean, Carl Joseph doesn't seem like a guy that you have to worry about being a knucklehead. He's definitely a captain type, an alpha male type, can take the football. He can do so many things for you. So I think based on what I think might be there right now for the Steelers at 25th overall, I would go Carl Joseph in the first.
Yeah.
How about you?
What's that?
Well, where would you fall in on that same question?
Oof, I'm afraid to answer it because I just don't know. I mean, I'm warming up to Joseph some, and although I don't know what you're going to get out of him year one, I think that most safeties, whoever you draft in whatever round, the second or the fourth, it doesn't matter, they're not going to make a big impact on defense year one because it's so hard to be trusted and learn this defense. So I think that, it doesn't really matter about the knee for me because regardless of who you take healthy or not, they're all going to be, behind the eight ball. So I think that's kind of working in Joseph's favor. Now, you made the good kind of comparison to Heath Miller, but I think Miller played that his whole last year at Virginia, right? I looked up the stat a second ago. He played 12 games that year. There was a
right. He just couldn't run because of the hernia.
Right, because it happened after the year. I mean, Joseph only played 3 games this year, so you don't have that much. I mean, you have 2013, 2014 tape, but you don't have a lot in 2015. So I think, Does that comment by Colbert even work against Joseph because Miller had more tape and Joseph doesn't?
Still, Joseph played 42. He played in and started 42 games.
Right, but I mean, from his final year standpoint.
Yeah. But I mean, obviously, I think that medical rechecks is huge, and that's going to take place, I think, this week in Indianapolis. Obviously, you have to have a good feeling about that knee,
mm-hmm.
And if you do, well, then I just think that enough of the tape is there. And look, this is a guy that I almost mocked in the second round because deep down inside, I think he is a guy that can slip down into that second round. However, when the Steelers go to stack their board, I have a feeling that he's going to be one of those quote-unquote kind of special players. I think it would be asking a lot for Carl Joseph to actually slide down to the Steelers' second-round pick, but, stranger things have happened. In fact, Dane Brugler has a second- to third-round grade on him. I just think that's a little reserve. As far as knocks go on Carl Joseph, from what I can tell in kind of the three, I think of like I watched like 2.5 games on him, on what I've seen, it's the obvious size concerns with him because he comes in what about 5'10"?
Yeah, I think 5'10".
Yeah, 5'10". So that's the old height challenged knock on a player. And really, the only other thing is really kind of the angles that he likes to take sometimes, and maybe some of his reads more so against the run than anything else. Those are really the only two knocks outside the knee, right?
Yeah, I mean, I guess, you kind of have that classic, maybe over-aggressive, miss some tackles because he plays so violently that you get...
What does Tomlin say about that, though?
Rather say, whoa, than sick him, yeah. So, it doesn't concern me that much, but if you want to have a knock, then that might be one. I mean, it's associated with TJ Green and Deion Bush. I mean, it's, any kind of classic thumper is going to get that tag on him. So yeah, there's not a ton of knocks, and I'm definitely warming up to the idea of him at 25. And I think obviously I'm not the first to do that. There's many people in the national media that have kind of floated it out there. So I'm just happy to see someone that's not a corner get mocked to the Steelers because I'm tired of these mocks, Dave. Every single person going with a corner. I mean, I know it could happen, but mix it up a little bit, people.
Yeah, and I probably need to mix mine up too. And who knows? I'll throw Joseph in my next mock as my first round pick, and kind of see how one shakes out to give people a break from the Andrew Billings. But here's the thing: if you don't get a guy in the first, safety, you might can wait to the third or fourth.
Yeah, I mean, obviously they're targeting a lot of second round guys, and there's going to be a pool. I mean, who knows who exactly is going to be available, but it's pretty clear they have interest in a lot of these guys, whether it's and this goes from second to fourth round, a Neal, a Thompson, a Simmons, a TJ Green, a Von Bell, Tyvus Powell. I mean, the list goes on and on. Deion Bush. I mean, you have so many guys there. So, you know, knowing how deep the safety class is, that's you know, just in a vacuum, not even thinking about Carl Joseph, but that's a great reason to not take Joseph, you know, at 25, because you know you have a lot of great talent that you're going to stumble upon somebody, you know, at 58 or 89 or wherever the case is.
And because they're, here's the thing. I think on average, and don't quote me on this is a rough number, 20 true safeties drafted every year, right?
Around there.
Is that fair?
That's fair.
All right, so the Steelers have already had in how many of them?
Close to 20.
One, two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight. And if Kirsch comes in, that's nine. I mean, we're talking, you know, half of the safeties. Needless to say, if Carl Joseph isn't, we'll see if Carl Joseph is brought in. You would think, even though he's a senior and Steelers probably got a good read on him, unless they're just going to go entirely by the combine reject, you would think maybe at some point they'd want him to come in just to have their own doctors kind of look at that knee. But I'm really starting to get the feeling now that if they don't take a safety in round one, they might not take one in round two either. You know, it might be round three before they do that. And I think, you know, when it comes to corner, as I've said many times, it's either, to me, it's William Jackson the third or bust in the first as far as the corner. I just can't see them taking any other corner in round one. If they don't get one in round one, then flip however you want, you know, between safety and corner. Possibly go corner in either the third or the fourth as far as that goes. But they sure have brought in a lot of both when talking about corners and safeties. And a lot of those guys, you know, are going to be third to fifth round guys.
Right. Yeah, you know, you can flip it however you want to. It could be corner in the second, then safety in the third. And that might be even a little bit better because, you know, as much as I love a Jonathan Jones, you don't want to pin your hopes on one guy because you don't know who, if he's going to be there or not. You know, I think maybe the second round might give you some more option at corner. I think it was Casterly that put him at 25, but I think an Artie Burns would make a lot more sense at 58 for Pittsburgh. That's a guy that I think I've highlighted before that I think fits well in this scheme and would be attractive to Pittsburgh because he's got really good ball skills and he's fast and you know he can hit a little bit as well. So maybe you would rather do that and take a corner in the second than rather wait in the third and hope someone there that you like is able to fall. So I mean it can go in so many different ways, Dave, and maybe to your point, to circle back on Joseph, I don't know exactly how combine medical rechecks work, but if they work the same as the regular combine, the Steelers doctors should be at the rechecks, because at the combine everyone's doctors are there. I mean, and they get to look at their guy and do whatever they want with a guy, so there probably isn't a compelling reason to bring Joseph into Pittsburgh for the medical, because at recheck the Steelers doctors should be there to check him out again.
That's a good point, and if indeed they're there poking and prodding along with everybody else,
I mean, imagine if they would be. Why wouldn't they go to the medical rechecks?
Right, and they should know Carl Joseph the human good enough by now.
Right,
and of course Mike Tomlin, Kevin Colbert were at the pro day. Not that he did anything. Now, Joseph obviously won't do anything before the draft anyway, and that's not a huge huge surprise either. The thing is, you know, you obviously want to get something out of him, especially if your first-round pick is rookie season. Mm. And I think they would be able to do that. He's a guy that you kind of would probably tutor as much as you could during the OTA programs. Obviously, he's probably not going to be able to go full speed. He is a guy that would potentially be a candidate to start off training camp on the active PUP list, with the hopes that he would be able to come off that before the start of the season, pretty much be a special teams contributor for you early on, and you know, who knows, by week 6-7. Or so he's starting to play more of a role in the defense. So with all that said, that might be a little, You got to look past his rookie season, though, when you're evaluating him.
Of course, of course. And yeah, like I said, I don't think any safety, you know, healthy or not, is going to make much of an impact in year one. I think they could get some work in some sub-package football, maybe to kind of take on that Golden role, what Golden had the last quarter of last year. But I think it's going to be tough to really jump Golden year one, just knowing the trust and the comfort level that you have in the system. So, I mean, you know, so yeah, you have to have your five-year plan, you know, with a guy like Carl Joseph.
Should it matter how much playing time you can get your first-round draft pick in year one?
It shouldn't be the say-all, end-all argument, but, you know, it's all pieces of the puzzle. It depends on what the team need is. If you have a position where you're like, hey, we need a guy to come in right away, you know, to play for us, then you're going to put more importance on what you can do year one. If you're in a situation where you feel like the position, like safety right now, you have a guy like Robert Golden that can take on that challenge and you're comfortable with that, then the need for year one impact lessens. So, you know, it depends on what you think you can do in sub-package football, what kind of wrinkles you can introduce, creative ways to get guys on the field. And I'm speaking just broadly here. There's a lot of variables that come into play. A lot of it's just based on the personnel that you already have and your own, you know, philosophy.
And I think we've identified this already. Really, there's only – you can make the argument maybe for safety, a defensive lineman – and maybe an edge rusher as far as players drafted in the first round who could potentially play 500 or more snaps in the rookie season, right?
I'm not even sure a safety could. I'd be surprised to see a rookie safety get, you know, close to 40-45% of the snaps. I think maybe nose tackle, like a sub-package, you know, a Billings type that can rush the passer and stay on the field. I think an edge guy potentially. If you're a corner, then you're going to have to jump Cockrell, which isn't impossible, but, you know, it's no guarantee. Playing time, consistent playing time is not going to, no one's playing 100% of the snaps as a rookie, you know, it's just not going to happen.
Yeah, you better throw in a disclaimer barring any injury or people will cut the snippet out and email it to you halfway through the season. corner too, but, you know, even, We've seen it year in, year out with the Steelers, especially when it comes to defensive rookies. They just Bud Dupree, of course, went against the grain a little bit, as did Jarvis Jones. But you're just not, in my opinion, you're just not going to see a corner thrown out there week one. And the same with a safety. I think you'd be lucky to get them sub-package snaps in even the first quarter of the season, of course, barring injury. But, yeah, you keep coming back to – you hear the beat writers now. But we've started quite a we're not carried right now on Steelers Nation Radio, so I'm going to go ahead and say shitstorm.
All right.
The talk about the Steelers potentially drafting a defensive lineman, all that really goes back to you now. So you're responsible for this, because you really got the ball rolling several weeks ago. Talking about Billings and the potential of being a first-round draft pick. And since then, most of the media are just going, you know, who are addressing this are going contrarian, just to go contrarian. I don't know if you saw, I'm sure you did see the post that I had late last week talking about, you know, how they really, in the post more than anything that I wrote was how, and I don't even think I mentioned Billings in that post. It was just how the Steelers need to seriously consider spending a first round draft pick on a kind of a versatile defensive lineman, because of the sheer fact that when you look at, man, the amount of snaps Cam Hayward and Stephon Tuitt played last year. And let's remember, Stephon Tuitt even missed, you know, two plus games because of a sprained knee, and the pushback to that is people say, well, what do you want to do? You know, pull Cameron Hayward or Stephon Tuitt off the field? Well, in so many words, yes, and, you know, as much as I possibly can, because I don't think you can continue to play both these guys, you know, the amount. Do you remember what the total amount? I'm trying to pull that post up right now. The total amount of snaps those two combined. But when you look, and here's what I did. I went, you know, through all 32 teams, and I took their two highest snap getters of defensive linemen, and really that's not a fair shakeout because you'll have some defensive ends in there in a 4-3 mm-hmm. who technically are outside linebackers, you know, in the Steelers system. But I just ran with those numbers anyway, and Tuitt and Hayward combined to play 83.3% of all defensive snaps last season. That tied them with the Jets for fifth in the league. Now, obviously, if Tuitt doesn't miss those games, if he only misses one game, he's probably him and Hayward up there right at the top. And people are going to – the pushback, as I said, and it seems to be from some of the media as well too, is, well, that's what you drafted these guys for, is to play. Well, I agree, but you know, if you look around the league, you know, the more you can rotate your players out, and good players at that, you're going to keep everybody, you know, fresher. And as we've seen, I think last year, kind of late in games, you know, the Steelers defense wore down, especially up front, getting no pass rush kind of late in games, other than games that really that they were in full command of. So, you know, when you do that, when you look back at several things that you've written, I think theoretically you could get a player such as, and don't get caught up on Andrew Billings being that player, but I think you can carve out at a minimum 50% of all defensive snaps for a guy like Bill, or, you know, a guy such as Billings.
Right. I think that's very attainable to do. And I mean, we've said in 100 different ways, you kind of looked at the percentages in a little different way than I've done it. We all kind of reached the same conclusion. I mean, I don't want to harp on it too much anymore because I think we've all kind of made our points here. But if it's a Billings or a Butler or whoever, you know, I have a lot of snaps that are available. No nose tackle right now, and you know, replacements for to spell Hayward and Tuitt. And again, I don't want to take Hayward and Tuitt off the field that much. They're at 90% right now. I want to take them down to 80%. That's about you're losing about 5 snaps a game. That's not much, but it adds up over a 16-game season. But so if you do the quick math of what I project at an 80% play clip for Hayward and Tuitt, and then you throw in those tackle snaps, I got about 740 snaps that are unfilled right now. That's 2/3 of your time, and I need impact players for 2/3 of my time. I can't put just any old guy out there if I want to expect to win and be consistent. So, you know, if you look at the big whole number that's there, you have a lot of snaps that need filled, and you're not really sure who's filling it, and that's a serious problem.
And let's just back it up just to sub-package snaps with those two guys. And as I wrote in my piece here, Tuitt and Hayward were on the field together for a total of 540 of a possible 756 snaps last season, which equates to, you know, 71.4. I think it's a fair assumption that even if you – that you can get those two to get to maybe that number again. I of course would like to see that number maybe a tad lower, but let's just assume that Hayward and Tuitt are able to hit that 71% number of all sub package snaps. That still leaves almost 30% of sub package snaps that at least one of them are not going to be on the field for.
Mm-hmm.
So you need a player to do that. Now, 30% is a pretty big number,
mm-hmm.
you know. And as I wrote in there, who do you want of on the roster right now? Who do you want, you know, assuming they don't add anybody else, who do you want out there? I mean, McClendon and Cam Thomas are obviously gone now. McCullers already did the study on him. The team obviously has not trusted him in his first 2 years to contribute as a nickel defender. Will that change this year? We don't know. But, I mean, he had no real game time nickel experience last year. And you would have thought if there was a year that you would expect to see that out of him, it would have been last year, in my opinion. You now have Ricardo Matthews, who they signed. that's all fine and dandy, but, I mean, do you really want 20% of those snaps going to a guy like him? Mm-hmm. And then really, you know, the only two other options right now at this point is a guy like LT Walton or last year's practice squatter, Keshad Lyons. I mean, I guess my question is how comfortable would you be adding nobody right now and expecting McCullers, Matthews, or let's say LT Walton as the third guy to pick up those 30% of all sub-package snaps that need to be played?
Well, I don't think you need me to tell you that it wouldn't be comfortable to do. I mean, you just rattle off the names, and no one's jumping off the couch for any of those guys. So absolutely, you're going to have to add somebody to the fold. And otherwise, you're going to have that trickle-down effect where you're going to play McCullers a lot more than what you want to. You're going to play Matthews more than you want to. I mean, you're right. I mean, there's things I like about Matthews, and I think, you know, if you can get him as your last guy on the bench to come in and kind of play some, if there's an injury, you know, you can get him in, you know, you're comfortable with him playing. But yeah, I don't want him being the guy that's going to play, you know, as the main guy to back up Hayward into it. I just don't think you're going to get that kind of productivity.
And a guy like McCullers anyway, let's assume no new player is brought in or drafted. This is a guy that's probably going to have to start the season as your nose tackle. So you got to ask yourself then too, how much more how much more playing time can you give him without wearing that big fella out?
Right. Obviously, conditioning, you know, is not terrible, but relative to his size and his position, he's not a strong suit. So you're not going to be able to get him to be a three down guy. You know, you can't put him out there for a 10 play drive with seven at nose tackle, then put him in sub package football and expect him to do anything.
And we know nothing. I mean, let's face it, we know nothing about LT Walton, Keshad Lyons.
Right.
I mean, the most we know about LT Walton is that the game against the Chiefs, and I think he was on the ground a bunch.
Yeah, we just go back off his college tape. But, yeah, I mean, you can't count on him. I want to throw him into the mix. I want to create that competition. But to create that competition, I need to bring in some other people to further that competition.
All right, with that said, now let's throw Andrew Billings out of the picture here. A guy like Javon Hargrave, who the Steelers brought in this past week. You just did a breakdown on him. What type of player is he, and can he be a player that can give you some sub-package snaps, and can he play the nose for you?
Absolutely, Dave. I mean, I know, obviously, you're talking South Carolina State. You're talking MEAC football, the tape that's available on him. You know, it was against Delaware State and Arkansas Pine Bluff, and neither of those teams were very good this year. You know, South Carolina State blew them out in both games, but man, Hargraves is just a phenomenal player, and he tested incredibly well. At the combine, he ran in the low 4.9s. He had a 34.5-inch vertical. I mean, no one could block this guy. I mean, he's a guy that can anchor against the run, is a huge threat as a pass rusher. He was just taking over games. Dave, in 2014, and I haven't even seen this tape. I saw one highlight clip on some news channel, I think, down in South Carolina. But in 2014, against Bethune-Cookman, Hargrave had 6 sacks. In the game. The 6 sacks is one game. I mean, it's absolutely remarkable. I mean, there were games this year where he had, you know, 3. I think the last 5 games this year, he had 10 sacks. I mean, this guy just could not be stopped. And it's not even that he's just dominating small school guys. I mean, this guy has gone everywhere on a big stage and represented himself very well. The Shrine game, he did a great job. He got called up as an injury replacement for the Senior Bowl, so I saw him. The day of practice, he got there. They didn't even have a jersey for him. He just was wearing like a, you know, non-color, no-number jersey, and he's just blowing guys up in one-on-ones. And he did well for the 2 or 3 days that he was there. Combine, you know, he killed it there with his numbers. It's hard to find a lot of negatives with him, and I think he's going to go mid-second round. So if Pittsburgh wants him, they better take him at 58, and there's not even a guarantee he's going to fall to 58.
Let's see, which way was I going to go with this? And Mitchell was at his pro day that we know. We don't know if anybody else was there either. He is pretty much, when you look at his production alone, and like you said, people are going to kind of question the, you need to take into account with the projection with him, the quality of competition, you know, that he faced. But I mean, there's no doubt he's a grown ass man.
Yeah, I mean, it's lower competition, but you expect him to dominate, and no one's dominated more than Javon Hargrave.
Now, when you look at the rest of the list of guys that could potentially be that player, I don't know about you. I'm not as big a fan of A'shaun Robinson. I'm a fan of Billings. Kenny Clark, I'm kind of lukewarm on. I think people might have him a little overrated. Vernon Butler, I kind of feel the same way, might be a little bit overrated. But, you know, am I missing anybody in there that could be a potential top three or top three third or drafted in the top three rounds who could be that potential nose tackle slash kind of guy to help you out in some nickel snaps?
Yeah, David, it's you're asking so much out of a guy. You need a really special talent, and I think that you kind of hit on the three that make sense: Billings, Butler, and Hargrave. There's not, maybe I'm missing somebody, but there's not any.
Would you put Clark in there? Is he more of a
Clark can definitely play the nose. I just don't think you're going to get enough as a pass rusher out of him. He's not in the realm of what Hargrave and Billings and Butler can do. He's not that kind of athlete. But he can play the nose, but I don't think he can play as well in sub package.
And Sheldon Day out of Notre Dame, he's more of a three tech anyway, right?
Yeah, I mean, I love Sheldon Day, but he's a shorter guy that definitely screams 4-3-3 tech.
But why aren't people, I mean, I guess people are with Billings screaming, you know, 0-1, maybe a 3 with him. But you know, let's go back to the old hypothetical here. Andrew Billings in the first or Javon Hargrave in the second?
Well, that's a good question. I think I'd still take Billings because he's kind of the guy. If I think if he's there, I think you take him. I don't know if he'll be there or not, but I think both are great options, but I'll take Billings.
But you could see them setting up for that scenario, couldn't you?
In terms of waiting on Hargrave?
Well, if Billings is gone, waiting, you know, getting Hargrave, hoping Hargrave in the second.
Yeah, I think if Hargrave's there at 58, I think it's a really strong possibility, and it wouldn't shock me in the least. And that's me, who's harped on the small school thing for so long now. But knowing the interest and seeing the tape and watching him compete on a big stage at the Shrine Game, at the Senior Bowl, at the Combine, it is absolutely huge for any small school kid to get to have that exposure and thrive in it. So I think that kind of mitigates the small school concerns. So, again, you don't want to pin your hopes on one guy falling, but if they miss out on Billings and they don't think Butler at 25 and Hargrave sitting there at 58, I think there's a strong chance they take Javon Hargrave.
Vernon Butler, where do you fall in on Vernon Butler? To me, he's maybe more of a three tech. Would you worry about him over the nose?
I think maybe he's got to be a little more consistent with his anchor, but I think he's certainly got the makeup and the build, and he's got the length. He's got 35-inch arms, which is pretty incredible. You know, to play the nose, I think he's probably even a little bit more better suited to get to kind of play the four more than Billings, because Butler, again, has a little bit more length. He's a little bit taller, or actually a good bit taller. But Butler kind of falls as that fringe guy that most people don't see as a 25th overall pick, that kind of see early second. So you kind of get stuck in a bad spot if you're Pittsburgh. I'm still not opposed to him at 25, because I still really like his game, and I just think he's worth it, you know, the way Billings is. But, you know, conventionally, and in the way most people think, you know, he's kind of that in the fringe, in that kind of, you know, not great spot for Pittsburgh.
Where do you fall in overall on A'shaun? I'm a bit surprised he's brought in, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I didn't really look at the tape a lot. I mean, I know a lot of people don't like him. You know, they don't think he offers enough as a pass rusher. You know, he's not touted as that first round guy, or he's not going to play to that level. I know that he's young though. He's 20 years old, so hopefully he could improve. You know, I'm sure John Mitchell told him great stories about the old Alabama days under Bear Bryant. But I don't think he's going to be the guy at 25.
Have we hit on the names though? I mean, are those the guys?
Yeah, so that's the good group. I mean, there's Malik Collins from Nebraska, but I think he's really more of a one gap. I think he really struggles, you know, to two gap and to anchor. So I don't think he fits Pittsburgh. You know, you could probably throw out a couple other guys, but I think we've hit on the main targets.
And that's why I kind of wrote in my post that yes, you'll hear that this is a deep defensive line class, but I think when you're talking about players who could potentially, you know, help you out at nose and then give you some snaps, you know, in sub package, I think the list shrinks tremendously.
Just because you're asking so much. I mean, it's hard for guys to be that everything, and that's what I said about Pittsburgh. It's evolved so much along the defensive line where you can't just have, okay, you're a five tech, you're going to have two gap and anchor against the run, and we don't really care about your pass rush. You have to do everything. You have to play the four, you got to play the one, you got to play the three, you got to be able to one gap, two gap, pass rush, play 90% of the time, stay healthy, stay conditioned, not miss practice. I mean, you got to check every box if you're a Hayward or Tuitt, you know, if you're in that role. And that means you need some top end talent. And you can't miss, it's asking a lot, and that's why that criteria, eliminates so many players, because you're asking for so much out of a guy.
Let's see, what direction do we need to go in now? Have we beat the pre-draft visitors up pretty
well? Let's just mention, did we mention Quentin Jefferson and Dean Lowry? I don't think.
No, we didn't. Dean Lowry, boy, you want to talk about a spark score guy. Dean Lowry is definitely a guy that you would, if you did draft him. Now, he's obviously not going to help you over the nose, but he is definitely a sub-package player that you could probably get on the field to get after the quarterback his rookie season.
Yeah, he's in the spark category, Dave, but he's also in the T-Rex category, 31-inch arms, and that kind of turns me off as a five-tech. So, he's a good athlete, like you said, but I don't think he really fits the mold well.
Yeah, as a true athlete, he's there, but really as a pass rusher, I think he would be the kind of guy that you wouldn't want out there as a five in your base, or if you have any inkling that you think the opposition is going to run the football.
That kind of takes him out of the equation for anything, then, I think.
Right. With that said, and based on what we know about him, he is a sixth, seventh round guy.
It's always sometimes tough for me to come up with a round, but yeah, he's a later round guy. You're not going to hear him on day one or two.
Yeah, I think Dane has him as a sixth to seventh round grade. So that makes sense. Any of those other? Let's see. I don't think I've watched much of Quentin Jefferson.
Yeah, I haven't either. I mean, they're obviously targeting athletes, guys, and they're 290 pounds, low 300, so they can run sub 5. I think, you know, Hargrave, Jefferson, Lowry, they've all done it. And Jefferson ran, I'm looking at it now, a 4.95. He's got a little bit of length. He's got really small hands, and the Steelers usually don't target guys with really kind of baby hands like that. 8 7/8 inches is what he came in with. But yeah, I don't know much about him. He's definitely a guy that we're gonna try to get to profiles on all the guys that are brought in. We're actually pretty close right now, but I'm interested in finding out more about him.
To me, Quentin Jefferson and Dean Lowry are guys. Those are the old crap guys. We didn't get what we wanted as far as a defensive lineman in the top three rounds there. So, you know, we probably need to add a body.
Yeah.
And these guys are the most athletic, potential pass rusher.
I am hoping to kind of switch gears with the edge guys. I'm hoping they bring in some more edge guys. Hopefully Nicholas kind of starts that trend, because these guys have come in waves. You know, the secondary, then they went defensive line for a little bit, and hopefully they bring – because I want to see them bring in some edge guys. I want to see them show that commitment and that interest in the position, because I think it's definitely worth upgrading.
Yeah, I mean, there's not many more safeties.
Honestly.
Bring in, I think, as far as, you know, we built that list of cornerbacks, you and I both, based on different criteria. They pretty much have tapped that out, I think, as well, too. And you know, really, it wouldn't surprise me if they don't bring in William Jackson, because, you know, being a senior and they should know a good deal about him. I kind of will. I think I'll be surprised if they bring in Mackenzie Alexander or Eli Apple right now at this point. But I mean, stranger things have happened. But I'm with you. I would like to see some of the edge guys. Are there any kind of second or third round edge guys that you would that fit everything that you'd like to see them bring in?
Yeah, this edge class, it's really kind of weak this year. I think they could bring in a Correa. I think that wouldn't surprise me. You know how I feel about Chalik Calhoun. We'll see if it actually happens or not. This edge class is just not—it's not that great.
I'd like to see him, and there's probably no need to bring in Jordan Jenkins because of him being a senior and all. But that—I tell you, I know the pass rushing needs improvement there, but there is no doubt I would have no issue throwing that guy out on the field against the run as an outside linebacker.
Right, right. Yeah, I think that's a good suggestion. You know, I wonder if they're going to bring in a Noah Spence, and if they want to get to know him a little bit better, that's a great environment to do it. It's hard to find a name, but as Stephen Weatherly from Vanderbilt, we'll see.
Have you kind of soured some on Carl Nassib, or just, you know, as far as scheme goes?
No, I haven't soured on him. I mean, I don't think he screams a fit in any one position. I think he's a versatile guy that you're going to be creative for him, and use him in a lot of ways. Don't pigeonhole him into one spot. But I think it's a guy that could play the three tech on one play, then play outside linebacker on the next. I think, you know, if you want to really be creative with a piece that you can move around and use in a lot of different ways, I think Nassib could be your guy. You know, he has not played a lot of football. He's a one-year starter. I mean, the guy just didn't get to play in high school, didn't really play at Penn State until this last year. So hopefully his best days are ahead of him. And I think with some coaching and some reps, he could really become a good player.
I'd like to see him bring in Yannick. How do you pronounce his last name?
Ngakoue, I think.
Bless you.
Yeah, because he's night.
You know, they went to Joey Porter was at his pro day. I think he kind of fits when you look at his tape. There's something there. As far as spark goes, though, I'm not sure. I'm trying to find him. I don't think he knocked it out of the park, so to speak.
Yeah, another guy is a Kyler Fackrell from Utah State. I could see him having some interest in a long, you know, who tested pretty well. But I just hopefully they bring in some guys to show that commitment, because I want to see an edgy guy go here within the first four rounds.
And especially, and look, you know, we beat this horse several times. I mean, this is probably the last year for Moats. It's probably the last year for James Harrison. Mm-hmm. It very well could be the last year for Jarvis Jones. Mm-hmm.
Long-term depth, yeah.
I mean, that leaves you a lot of holes. I want a guy that I think I can get on the field later this season who, in the meantime, can headhunt for you on special teams and play a big factor there. And I'd be disappointed. And look, you know, all apologies to the Anthony Chiccolo fan club, but I don't see. There's no reason yet to think that he could be a long term contributor. You know, playing a lot of downs for this team, and because of that, I really, and even if he is, that gives you Dupree and Chiccolo and really nothing else. Mm-hmm. I mean. And we'll see what happens with Jarvis Jones and whether or not he has that option picked up. But even if he does have that option picked up, it leaves a lot to be desired right now. So I'm with you. I'd like to see them bring in some edge guys that, you know, they could get maybe in the fourth or fifth round. And I think they will. I think that's going to be the game plan. And as I said, I really like Jordan Jenkins. I think he's the kind of guy still has upside as a pass rusher, but those long arms and you know, probably not the best get off, but if you could help him in that area, I think he has some experience of already standing up. So that'll help you there. Probably not a guy that you know, going to drop a whole heck of a lot. But I think a guy that could potentially do that, a great character guy all the way around, too. I think he really checks a lot of the boxes. How did he come in on that outside linebacker ranking or you know, that you did?
Did he make a list? Let me double check real quick if we have a second. I think he did make it. I think on my second look to pick up the guys that I missed, I think his 40 time just made it. So let me look real quick.
I think his athletic. I'm trying to see what his spark score was. I don't remember him jumping off the chart as far as spark goes. Let's see here if I can find his name on here. No, I'm having problems finding him here in the edge. So he would be a guy probably if he slipped, you know, round five or something like that. You know, initially I think I might have had him graded as a round three guy. That might have been a little bit too generous as far as that goes.
Yeah, Jenkins did make my criteria. The edge guys that made it, outside linebacker / edge, was Fackrell, Leonard Floyd, maybe they bring in if they want to, you know, look at 25, Jordan Jenkins, Charles Tapper, and Stephen Weatherly. So that's the list.
Interesting. All right, Marvin Lewis got an extension. Are you surprised?
It's a one-year deal, so it's just saying we'll make you a lame duck coach the next year, coach. That's not a ringing endorsement.
He's going to have to start winning a playoff game here for too long,
it
right?
It hasn't stopped him since, so I don't know. I don't think that's yeah. in the contract.
Yeah, embrace mediocrity. Yeah. But, I mean, look, I really don't like his chances of winning a playoff game this year. I mean, I think Pittsburgh's going to be better. I think Baltimore, I mean, look, Baltimore's not going to be, as bad as they were last year. I mean, they've got a lot of holes to fill. And when you look at Cincinnati offensively, they got some holes to still fill at wide receiver. I mean, they lost some pretty decent players on the offensive side of the football. Mm-hmm. So, and Andy Dalton's going to be Andy Dalton. Do you think about trading AJ McCarron if you can for a mid round pick right now?
It depends on the haul, but I think they're ultimately not going to. I think they're going to stand put in case of an injury.
But if you could get a third rounder for him right now in this year's draft.
There's a lot of value in a backup quarterback. If you find somebody and hit on somebody, I think you stick with them, and maybe that value increases over time too. So I'd probably wait.
Boy, I would be tempted. I would be tempted. I think McCarron really showed. He really surprised me last year.
Yeah. Real quick here, Dave, before we close up shop. You want to mention Tyler Higbee doing stupid things? Draft guys doing stupid things.
Boy, you want to talk about? I don't understand. I'm wrapping myself in bubble wrap. After I do my pro day, I'm not leaving the house. Mm-hmm. Of course, it's easy for someone like me to say. But why? I just don't understand these guys acting like knuckleheads like this. And I know there's more to come out still about maybe what did or didn't happen when it comes to Tyler Higbee. But, you know, this is a guy that very easily could have heard his name called. You know, I think best case scenario round two, but I think realistically maybe round three. And now you go get yourself in trouble like this, and really you're costing yourself some money.
Yeah, and just if you don't know what the charges are, the second degree assault, alcohol intoxication, second degree fleeing for evading police. So there's a fun rap sheet there. And this guy might not even – honestly, he might even pull out of the draft because he's got big medical issues. He's got lack of starting experience. And now an assault charge on his rap sheet. Those are the three big three strikes against you.
So you think he might go undrafted?
I think there's a possibility because there's such a limited look at him. He hasn't worked out because of his knee injury. He's a 1 year starter at Western Kentucky, and now he's got you put an assault charge on you, and in this day and age with the league, you got a big red flag.
You would look at him in the seventh round if you're the Steelers, though, wouldn't you?
I don't like drafting guys, and then the first question being about, what's going on? Did you assault somebody? So, I mean, the talent is good. I mean, I get that, but knowing that there's such a limited body of work and there's a medical concern about that knee, you have a lot of big things working against you.
I would bend the rules when it comes to the seventh. I would bend every rule imaginable when it comes to seventh round draft picks, because if you don't like what you see, I mean – I think as long as the upside is there, a guy like Gerard Holloman last year, that guy had no upside. I still don't understand that pick. And look, I know it's hard to find fault with seventh round draft picks or sixth round draft picks because, you're just hopeful that they even make the team or give you a good practice squad candidate. But, the slugs and Gerard Holloman, I think most of us saw that coming there. I would definitely take a chance, I think, on what I know now. Of course, I'm not doing the investigating on Tyler Higbee as far as, what's involved with all this knucklehead stuff from Sunday. But I don't think he'll go on draft. I think some team will draft him probably fifth round or later. So we'll see. All right, Alex, I appreciate you sitting in again. As usual, we've been able to find enough to talk about, and both of us will probably be back again, at it again on Friday. For folks, you can follow me on Twitter at Steelers Depot. You can follow Alex on Twitter at Alex_Kazori. You can follow my co-host David Todd at David M. Todd. Follow the show at Terrible Podcast. Email the show, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. Donations, SteelersDepot.com, and the donate button is up front. We'll read a list of donators on the Friday show. Alex, don't let me forget to do that. I want to make sure I highlight some of these people that are donating to the show. Have a great week, everybody. We'll be back on Friday. And as always, thanks for listening to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.